Femme Forte is sponsored by Ultimate Drill Book. UDB app modernizes marching band. Spend less time, have more fun, and achieve at a higher level. Just upload your drill from Pyware into the UDB app, and everyone in your band gets animations with your show music, precise pathways, syncs music, notes, props, and so much more. It's just easier. Head to ultimatedrillbook.com and use code FEMFORTE when you order to get 20% off UDB app pro.
Trying to teach the kids, like, that's not what this is. And if that's what this is, then we're doing our jobs wrong. But trying to help them understand that their impact and their relationships that they can build within their sections, within between sections, that impact can really build a program into something that can last forever.
Welcome to Femme Forte, a place where we have real conversations with influential female music educators and performers. I'm your host, Amanda DeFree. In this episode, I am joined by someone who has taught me that competition isn't everything. Katie Van Doren is a Cedar Park native who currently serves as the marching band director at Vandegrift High School. For Katie, music wasn't her motivation to joining band.
Well, I didn't really want to be in band. All my friends were in band. So when it came time to pick, like we all do, our sixth grade choice sheets or whatever they're called, I chose band because that's what my friends did, and they were all in the trumpet class, and I wasn't very good at the trumpet. I got moved very quickly off of trumpet and into French horn because I didn't practice. It wasn't something I enjoyed doing. I was just glad to be a part of the group. And that's something I feel is really great about band, is you don't have to be good at it. Like, you know, in sports, and that's something I learned early on in sports, is you do have to be good at them. You do have to carry the team. You build your skill sets. And if you're not good at sports, if you're not good at as a team player, it's really hard to progress. But in band, it's okay to not be great at it. If you just want to participate. And early on, that was something that kind of kept me in band, is I didn't have to practice to be a part of it. And then, you know, as with all things, you want to be better at it and you want to move up, you start practicing more and you do all that stuff. But early on, that's what attracted me to it, is my friends were in it and I could just kind of participate and not have to give it my all when I was trying to give it my all with the other activities I was in.
Right. Yeah. Band is such, you know, it's not just about the music. It's also something that you feel at home with, make a community. Is for a lot of people, it's their social circle. And you mentioned specifically about teaching that you use band and music to get to kids nowadays and to teach them how to be accountable and how to have integrity and all these great character traits. So is that, I guess, something that you were taught in your high school experience that made you want to stick with being a music educator to kind of pass down the torch to the next generation?
I don't know if I was taught that. You know, I went to an extremely competitive high school at Cedar Park, and I marched in some very, very good drum corps, and I also went to a really great university. And, you know, I think I was always the kid that wasn't the music kid. I wasn't the kid that I didn't know all the excerpts. I didn't know all the shows. I wasn't interested in that part of it. What I liked about band was the teamwork aspect. I loved playing, you know, I liked being a part of the group. And I think I developed into a music kid as I went through college. And as you know, as a teacher, and I think all teachers can see this, is you teach every type of kid in the high school. And if you're only focused on teaching the kids who are the music kid, and you're not focused on, okay, well, what is this program supposed to be? You end up losing kids. And, you know, my whole goal as a teacher is that the band hall is where kids truly belong, not just a place for them to hang out, but that even if a kid doesn't, maybe they don't have a lot of friends in the band, they still feel comfortable there and they still feel like they have a place. They don't have to be great at what they do, but they need to feel included. And I like to use music and band and all the things, you know, there's a leadership part of it. There's the marching band part. You know, you have all these different ways to get to kids, and using those parts to get kids to buy in and be a part of this thing that's bigger than them. And in some pretty tough high school situations.
Exactly. So specifically your marching band program, I mean, y'all were last year's Texas State marching band, you know, champion. I know that y'all won BOA a couple years ago. Would you say, obviously there is the music element into it. But would you say creating those experiences, fostering the leadership skills, is what helps make your band program so successful?
Oh, absolutely. There's so many different things that make a program successful. I think there's a lot of luck involved in that too. You never know what the show is going to be or how the kids are going to respond to it. And you know, the staff is a big part of that, but I think it's definitely a part of building that quality, if you will, program. It's definitely not something we talk about. We don't talk about winning. We don't talk about going to contests. We've been really fortunate in the past 5, 6, 7 years that we've always done very well, you know, and there's going to come a year where we don't. And what I hope is that the students, they're allowed to be disappointed, of course, but I hope that they don't leave that situation thinking that they were failures or like they let us down. I hope they leave maybe a little disappointed, but also as teachers, us doing a great job of lifting them up and teaching them that it's about more than just winning or losing.
Right. Yeah. And I think you make a really interesting point. As someone who came from a very small high school, you know, we used to look up to schools like Vandegrift and all the big names out there and thinking that they were very structured, very all about competitiveness and competition. But it's really nice to hear that at the end of the day, we're all just kind of the same. Like we all come from, you know, we're all still kids. We're all still, you know, passionate about different things outside of band. And I really enjoy that, you know, like you said, that it's not about as successful as the program is. It's not about winning and it's not about competitive. There really is, like you said, the leadership factor, the character building skills into actual human beings when they become adults and go on to the real world. So I really like that. Another thing I found out about you was you were in Yamaha's 40 Under 40, which was really, really cool to see. And there's a quote that you said that said, "This year, after our students finished their last performance, I experienced one of the proudest moments as an educator." What exactly did you mean by that?
To be honest, I'm not sure what that's referring to. But I know in the past couple of years, and I think this might be true for most young teachers, is when you're just starting out, when you're just getting your feet under you, there's a lot of focus on competition. There's a lot of focus on the winning. And I know for me, it took quite a few years to get past always viewing each performance through this lens of, was it good or was it bad? Are we going to win? Are we going to lose? And kind of after 2019 and really getting through COVID and realizing that there's more to it than that, every time I view a performance now, I of course still see it through that lens. And you're like, oh, I wish what? Like, what was that? You know, you still see that with Marching Band, with concert, being like, who played that note? You know, you still have that moment. But I definitely don't take for granted their performances anymore. And especially when you start realizing that they're kids and that you leave the field, you know, as a conductor, you're just pretending to be in charge and you hope that they want you to be a part of their performance with you, but you're not really. So every time a group of young people performs, whether they're high school kids or they're drum corps kids, it always allows me now to step back and remember that this is a gift and that they are, that this product, this show, this performance that they're giving is truly a gift for everyone. And whether we are the best, whether we are the worst, it matters, of course. Like, of course, there's a competitive aspect that matters, but it doesn't matter in that they've come together and created this incredible performance for others to view and to enjoy that will never happen again. And it's only possible with every single person on that stage or on that field. So I hope that young teachers, if you're listening, that you remember that, because it's something that took me a long time to learn and to appreciate those performances. And again, I think COVID had a lot to do with that, is when you don't get to do that, when you don't get to see kids have that experience, you start to remember, you should say, you remember and realize just how special that is.
Yeah. There's actually a special moment in 2020. You actually made a post specifically about Crown. And I'll read this to you. It says, "Because of Crown, I was taught to work hard. Because of Crown, I learned how to be a confident, independent woman. Because of Crown, I have lifelong friends from across the globe and in all walks of life. Because of Crown, I met my husband and my best friend. Hashtag because of Crown, my life is better and I am a better person for myself, my family, and my students. And seeing that was just, wow, just absolutely powerful. So when you mentioned really treasuring those beautiful moments and those performances, it does really mean a lot. And this post specifically spoke to me when I read it. Can you elaborate a little bit more about that and what that means to you?
You know, I'm not sure if you marched drum corps or if you...
I did not. I did some indoor stuff, but I actually did not have any drum corps experience.
Well, I don't have any indoor experience, so they're not equal. You know, I went into drum corps really young. I would say very young I would hope that people might wait a little bit longer than that now. And, you know, I went in one kid and I came out an adult. And I feel very strongly that that's a... It's not just because of my awesome husband, Evan, you know, who I got to meet through it, but, you know, my teachers in the activity who are now some of my greatest friends, really, I don't want to say broke me, but taught me that I'm stronger than I was. You know, I have a bunch of friends who I marched with who were older than me, who, again, taught me that I'm stronger than I thought I was. And it creates this family that And it's more than just the people you march with. There's the administrators. There's the people who drive everything. There's the people who cook for you. And that experience is something that I do hope everyone gets in some way, whether it's indoor or drum corps or marching band, that they get to be a part of something so much bigger than themselves. And they get to realize that, you know, I got to be a performer in this organization. And that was my way of contributing to the longevity of this organization. But there's so many people in volunteer roles, there are people who are in educational roles who get to do that as well. And it's just a really special thing. And, you know, Carolina Crown was my home for a while. And I think it'll always be my home.
That's truly amazing. And on that note, like you said, realizing and learning that you were stronger, that you are, you know, one of the things that this podcast is about is not only to shed a light on who you are and share your story, but to talk about women in this space as well. And so kind of on that note, as your experience as a female educator, have you had any barriers or struggles in your career?
I think I've been very fortunate. And, you know, I haven't had any external barriers. I've had a lot of internal barriers where, again, I don't know, like there's moments where I don't know if I'm good enough. I don't know if I can do this. This is like, you come to I have to do this thing and I don't know if I can, and you get over it and you do it. But I wouldn't say had any external barriers at all. And maybe that's because I'm a bigger woman, you know, I'm tall, you know, I come across maybe a little bit differently than other women. I feel like living and growing up in Austin and having a home base here, the band director community here it's unmatched. You know, we all, when I got here, you're friends with everybody, you know, especially in Leander, we go to each other's houses, we have parties, you know, you know, everybody. So there's not the weird, sort of, again, barriers that get put up in other parts of the state, just because we were all about the same age and we all are like, people come and clean up my band. Or I remember calling up Jason Robb and be like, I don't know what to play for UIL. And he would, you know, him and Evan would help me pick some stuff. And I'm like, I don't like that. You know, and then they say, well, something like that then, you know, and I feel like I got really lucky because I got to be here where I had a lot of people looking out for me and to help me through those first couple of years. Again, where I feel like those barrier years where you either have someone to kind of take you under their wing and get you through it, because teaching, you don't learn how to teach in college. You learn how to get into a job and you learn how to operate within the job, but you don't learn how to teach. So, you know, I feel like people hit those barrier years and you're like, I can't do this, you know, and unless someone is there to help you, I think that's where a lot of people end up not sticking with it. So no, I feel like I got really, really lucky in that my first job was in Austin and my second job was in Austin and I've only had two. So
And so you mentioned those internal barriers. And so something I even experience in my personal line of work is imposter syndrome. Have you ever I guess in those words, have experienced imposter syndrome, like as a music educator, when you, or can you elaborate a little bit further on what you mean exactly by facing internal barriers?
I think that's one way to put it. You know, I don't know if imposter syndrome is something you can really, I'm sure someone who's much smarter than me can say, this is what it is. And here's it. But you know, for me, what it's more when you come upon situations or you like, you're seeing that I have to do this. Like I've got to, I remember the first time I had to take the band to a football game and I was in charge of the band and I was like, I can't do this. I don't know how to get the, and you start realizing you get them on the bus, they get them off the bus, you get them in the stands, you play some songs, you get them out, you know, you start working through all that stuff. But I think for me, it's more like you have the situation and remembering that it seems impossible because, and maybe it's because you've always seen someone else do it. You've seen, you know, for me, and I think again, for most women is it's always a man who's in charge and you're like, well, I don't know if I can do that. I'm not old enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough to do that. And it just taking the first step and breaking those different situations down into steps and checking it off the list. And all right, let's do the next one. Check it off the list. And I remember when Mike would leave the wind and say, you got to teach the wind ensemble. I was like, I can't teach the wind ensemble. And you get into it and you're like, they're just kids. And the music's way harder and I've got to figure out how to conduct this, but they're just kids. And I hope all teachers remember that too, is that imposter syndrome. That's just you. And the kids don't, I mean, they care. They care because they love whoever the director is, or they love how it's been done because that's how it's always been done. But they're just kids. And you as a teacher have the ability to influence them and you have the ability to make things happen and do all the things that need to be done. It might be done a little differently, but they want to be in the program. And as long as you're doing everything with the best of intentions, that's all internal. And that was one of the things, as soon as I figured that out, that this is, the kids, they're not going to do anything, you know, the parents aren't going to do anything.
Yeah.
And you just like take the first step is when a lot of those feelings, they don't go away, but they get easier to manage.
Yeah. One of the things that I love about you as a person and you as an educator is you're very strong and confident. And so one of the things I've been meaning to ask you is, what has helped you build that confidence over time?
I am not a very confident person. I think that's something I project. I feel maybe as I've gotten older, feel more comfortable in different situations. But I think a lot of times that confidence is faked because that's part of being a leader is if you feel uncomfortable you have to still do it. You still have to, you got to talk to the kids, you know, and you got to make stuff happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I come across as confident. I don't personally feel like I'm a very confident person. I have become more comfortable as I've gotten older and more comfortable as I've had more situations, where I have to do stuff and make stuff happen.
Yeah.
But, I think that's something that you just, again, it comes with age. Who wants to hear that? But it comes with age and it comes with experience. And also, you know, the more people I meet in this job, the more people I see do it different ways, the more comfortable you realize or you become realizing that it doesn't have to be done one way. And I think that's where a lot of that confidence or the lack of confidence can come from in young teachers and young women is you don't see other people do it different ways. So when you do want to do something differently, you feel like, well, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I have to do it this way, but I don't feel comfortable doing it that way. So then you just don't do it. You either don't do anything or you try to do it this way that you saw someone else do it and it's not you. It's not authentically you. So I think becoming more comfortable with trying to be authentically you and being the teacher that you are, even if it might mess up sometimes, helps build that confidence and build that comfortability.
No, that's really amazing. And it's really actually quite interesting to hear you say that you don't think of yourself as a confident person because I actually just came back from Dallas. I took some time off last week and I was talking to my family and telling them about this podcast. And I was like, and they were like, oh yeah, who are you having on? I was like, oh, this is amazing educator, Katie Van Dorn. I'm so excited. We're going to be in the studio for the first time filming all of this. And so, like I said, as someone who, you know, I did not end up pursuing the career being a music educator, but I so much appreciate people who are in it. And it's, and even being in the position I am now has made me look up to people like you as an inspiration, and you know, not only as a female educator, but just in general as human beings. And again, I cannot say enough how grateful I am for you to be here and to sit down and have this amazing conversation.
Thank you.
You're welcome. One of the things that you mentioned previously, which I thought was really interesting, is you are right. In college, in school, we are not taught how to teach. And I do some teching stuff on the side, but a lot of those positions that I've taken on, I'm kind of just thrown in there and be like, okay, go, basically. And I'm sure people who have gone, you know, the music education route through college and stuff have had a little bit more experience with like classroom pedagogy and et cetera. But what would you say for you, since your first year of teaching to kind of where you are now, what are some things that you have, I would say some skills or some things that you've picked up over the years that have helped you become a better educator?
It's kind of a two-sided question. Yeah. As far as the teaching part, mm-hmm. you know, you watch and you try and you do a bad job sometimes and you're like, dang, that didn't work. Okay, well, we'll try again tomorrow. I think the biggest thing as a teacher is just being more patient and patient with myself and patient with the kids. Yeah. You know, you're going to learn how to get the kids from page zero to the end of the March season. There's a process. You can kind of learn any process on how to do it and you'll get it done. Same thing with UIL. You pass out the music and the kids are smart. You know, they're, yeah. It doesn't matter if they're like super great on their internet, they're going to figure it out and you're going to help them figure it out. There's typically enough time. Like that's all going to work itself out. But the, you know, being patient with the process, being patient with yourself when you try something and it doesn't, it inevitably but doesn't work. And you go, okay, well, you know, that used to destroy me because, you know, we're all perfectionists and I grew up in this incredible band program and went to school in this incredible school and got to see all these different band programs operate, you know, through student teaching and through teching. And I wanted to be that good now. And yeah. you just can't. You don't have the words, you don't have the synapses. You know, you hear stuff coming at you and you're like, I don't even know what's happening right now. And then there's some kid in the back. I had a 13 person trombone section in my first year and there's some trombone player in the back. You're like, I can't even focus on the music because you're like, they're doing the thing where they like hit each other with the slides. You're like, and I don't know how to deal with it because you're 23 years old and that kid's 18.
Yeah.
You're like, what are you gonna do? Yell at them? That doesn't, you know, that's sort of, that's your reaction to it and doesn't work. So
yeah.
I think patience and learning how to just, you know, again, time, let yourself take the time to get better at it and staying with it.
Yeah.
Because you're not good at it. No one's good at it. And anyone who thinks they're good at it in their first 3 or 4 years, that's a wonderful gift.
Yeah.
That's someone who's very confident in themselves. You know, I think you get to year five and you go, oh, I'm really bad at this, you know, and then you start kind of figuring out what your way, what's your thoughts, what your goals are, what, you know, what your vision is for teaching and all that. But it just takes time. And I wish I would have heard that from someone earlier and I probably did. So if there's someone listening to this who told me that, I'm sure you told me, but you know, you just want to be good so quickly. And especially in the world now, the comparison is inevitable. And you watch these bands go out and perform. You're like, why can't I do that? You know, why are we not doing that?
Yeah.
Because, you know, because this year that wasn't for you, or, you know, you listen to another band play and you're like, well, I don't know what their situation is. So the comparison game in today's world is probably the hardest thing for young teachers to just take it and accept it that, okay, I'll get there. And that's just going to take some time. I can't quit. I can't give up. I can't get frustrated. And just staying as student-centered and focused as possible, which is, again, almost impossible as a young teacher because you're so focused on yourself. But that's what I wish I would have done sooner, is kept that as my, you know, your guiding light is the student experience, the student their experience and their them having it, it's a remembering that it's about them and their journey.
Yeah.
And you just get to be a part of it. And you have your journey's 30 years long and their journey's only 4 years long or 3 years, however they see you.
And now a word from our sponsors. Stride TV is now available to download on the App Store. Watch exclusive videos like Femme Forte, Inside Drum Corps, Charity Chase, and so much more. Use code FEMFORTE at checkout to get 50% off premium features like community chat, live Q&A with me, and behind-the-scenes content. Stride TV is home of the arts, a dedicated media platform for the arts community. Into your first couple of years of teaching, did you always know that you wanted to be like a leader in your organization like you are now? Like in terms of now you're the marching band director, now you're the, you know, associate director of bands. Like, did you always know that you wanted to step into a more leadership role starting out?
I think I did. You know, I think everyone thinks that. You know, I think I wanted to be a head director one day. And, you know, as you get further into it, you either go, yeah, this is where I want to be. Or, you know, I would say that last year I had a great job. You know, I got to be the second director with working with some of my best friends, and we were all firing all cylinders and everything was great. And, you know, this year, an opportunity presented itself and it's like, well, this is the job. This is the job I've always wanted. I think I've always wanted, you know, and so let's go for it. And, you know, being the head director has been a lot, but it's been also extremely rewarding, and getting to have more of an effect on more students and more parents, and has been pretty special. And also being able to guide staff members. And again, I've got a great team, but being in that role has been a different journey. With high school band, you have this group that, and especially with the student leaders, that all they want to do is have an impact on this program. Now they don't know what that means. They don't know. Most of them are like, oh, I want to be a drum major. And you're like, why? So I can salute. Well, that's really dumb. But we're, you know, they don't know. And I'd say that a lot of them do know. You know, I remember as a kid when I wanted to be a drum major, I didn't really know what that meant. I knew I wanted to have impact, but I didn't know what that looked like. And that's one of the things that we try really hard to teach the kids, whether it's our own students or if I happen to be working with another group of student leaders, is teaching them what the impact looks like and what their relationships with other students can really bring to their program and elevate their program. And again, not with competition. And that's something that's also hard. I know I've got kids who are like, we care so much about competitions. Like, who cares? I don't remember ever talking about that, but that's what they see. You know, they see this marching band that's competitive. So that's all we focus on then, you know, trying to teach the kids like, that's not what this is. And if that's what this is, and we're doing our jobs wrong. But trying to help them understand that their impact and their relationships that they can build within their sections, within between sections, that impact can really build a program into something that can last forever. And that, you know, that they're, we talked to the seniors about what their legacy is. And we're like, not the Macy's parade, you know, not the state rankings and all that stuff. Like, your legacy is when a freshman who never met you 4 years down the road knows your name because of what you did for your section. You know, that's the kind of stuff we try to teach the kids.
Exactly. And I certainly believe, I actually went to, I believe two of those camps when I was a junior and senior in high school. And certainly leaving an impact, like you said, is something that I treasure a lot into doing what this is. Like, I really hope that one day, I was actually telling my friend this last night, I was like, my goal for this podcast, one day when this hits off the ground and I'm hoping that it's successful, is whenever I'm, you know, stopping out of high school or when UDB's on a trip or something, if someone, some listener, even if I get an email that said, hey, I listened to your podcast and I just wanted to say thank you for sharing this platform or creating this space for women like me, or something along the lines of, hey, oh my gosh, like, I just want to say I really appreciate what you did, or having so-and-so guest that really taught me X, Y, and Z. Like, that is really the hope for this. I know that, starting something small, eventually hoping that it create that impact and having the butterfly effect, that is the kind of where the heart of this project comes at for me. And so certainly what you just shared of creating that in the student leaders and hoping that they take that with them onto whatever journey that they may end up on. It certainly made an impact on me, so I can only hope that it's impacting other people. So one of the things you previously mentioned in our conversation outside of this is that you're a mom. And so I know in the previous podcast I mentioned earlier, you talk a little bit about the work-life balance. And I know it's different for a lot of people. I had Caitlin Wolf come on and Jana Harvey come on, and they shared a little bit about what their work-life balance is. And one of the things that you said in your interview with Evan is that you're being very intentional about your time and making sure that in the time that you do spend at home, it's totally dedicated to your personal and family life, and that you don't necessarily take work with you. So I guess to go off of that, I have two questions. One is, what does your day-to-day look like? And two, how do you maintain that work-life balance?
Well, I think we can all agree that work-life balance is this wonderful thing that we all hope exists. And yeah, some days it works great and some days it doesn't, especially this past year, or say these past 10 months. It has been a journey of trying to find the new normal, mm-hmm, for me and for my husband and for our 10-month-old daughter. So that was not taking work home is still something I try really hard to do. You know, I the staff knows this, is I do the announcement sheet that goes out on Sunday morning at 9 a.m., but it gets done on Friday during the school day at some point. You know, I try really hard to make all the things I have to get on the weekend actually happen during the week. You know, if lesson plans, like I don't have a Monday sectional in the morning, I do all my listening in the car and I make my lesson plans on Monday morning and give sectional stuff out on Mondays for the kids at Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And I hope that my staff feels comfortable doing that too. I think so. You know, I when I was younger, I don't think I ever felt comfortable not working all the time. And I don't think that's anyone's fault. I just didn't feel like I had the space. I didn't feel like I should stop working. I felt like I should be working. I should want to work. And that comes from the Leander culture, where we were all, none of us were married. I think like one of us might've been married, but we were all single or were dating someone in the profession. No kids. Most of us didn't have a house. Like we lived the job. And, you know, when you grow up in that, like as a young teacher, that becomes your new normal. And when everyone started getting married, when people started buying houses, when people started leaving the profession, I think a lot of us, I would hope a lot of us started looking at that a little differently. I know I did. You know, my husband left teaching and he's still working just as much, but in a different capacity.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the idea of work-life balance and trying to not bring work home, I think is impossible, but it's something that I had to, it's a learned behavior where, that some days it works and some days it doesn't. You know, I think my day to day now, I get up really early and I try to work out. Some days it works out, some days it doesn't. And that's my time for myself. Cause I don't really, you know, I go home now and where I used to be able to say, Evan, I need some space. And, he would keep working and I would read or, do laundry. I don't know. I don't do laundry. you know, I would take the time I needed. Now I go home and I didn't get to see my daughter all day. Someone else did. Well, now I want to spend that last hour and a half that she's awake with her. Yeah. And she goes to bed and then I'm exhausted and I go to bed. So I don't have that time. So I had to find that time and I put it in the beginning of the day, get up, go to, we are, our section will start at 7 now because our school starts earlier, work all day. And, you know, I'm trying to be intentional with, if I don't have a sectional and I'm not teaching, after school, that I try to leave. It's almost impossible. You try to leave when you can. And my staff is unbelievably supportive. And I hope that everyone has people like that where they're like, go, why are you, what are you doing here? It's like, well, I've got to like, go. You don't need to go home. Yeah. And that's something that's kind of in our, at least the five of us that will work together is, you know, if Joe needs to go, go home. It's fine. We are here more than we need to be.
Yeah.
You know, with Kyle and Anna, the same thing. And if like, if you got to go take care of something, go take care of it. I don't know if that's something that exists everywhere, and I hope it does. But as far as work-life balance, I know it's a high priority for our staff because there's a fear of people leaving. And when you've got a good team, you don't want your team to leave because they don't feel like they can have a life outside of the band hall. It's just band. And you know, it is a big deal in Texas,
yeah.
But you're a teacher and you go into education to have a family.
Mm-hmm.
You go into education to be able to have, you know, you've got the summer vacation, you've got spring break. You know, most people don't have that time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a great job. You have a lot of impact. You got a lot of kids that need you.
Mm-hmm.
So you want people who are good at it to stay in it. Well, you've got to find ways to make them want to stay.
Exactly. And you mentioned a good point that, you know, especially when the pandemic happened and people started looking at, including yourself, started looking at their profession differently, what would you say for you has made you stay?
I mean, it's the impact you have. There's not another job like it. And, you know, I think we've all teachers are guilty of thinking, well, what if I did something else? Like you start tallying up how much money you make and how many hours you know, this sounds terrible. I don't really know how much I make. I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. My husband takes care of all of that stuff because I know myself and I know if I knew how much I make an hour, because that's whether I, you know, you start, I kind of know,
yeah.
But I don't want to know to the point that I know how much I make in an hour, especially as a band director. We get a stipend and that's great, but you give so many hours that you start adding it up, and I don't want that to be something that clouds why I do it.
Right.
You know, if there's a reason I don't want to teach anymore, I want it to be because there's some other passion that I feel really strongly about, not exactly. Because I don't feel valued monetarily. I'm not making enough money. I mean, you don't go to teaching to make money. You go to teaching because you want to make an impact on the lives of children, and you want to be able, again, to mold young minds and, you know, I get really lucky that I get to do that through music and I get to be a part of it with them. How many teachers get to go on stage and, you know, do that with the kid? The answer is none. And, you know, I just, if for whatever reason that were to be something I didn't want to do anymore, I'd want it to be because of another passion, not because of how much I make. And, you know, when I started looking at your job differently, you do look at the hours and you look at, okay, well, if I'm at school and I'm not at home, especially now, you know, mm-hmm. Before Evan just came to everything and now he can't, or if he does, like, okay, well, Anna can only come for 30 minutes because we have to hit nap time, or she's gotta go to bed, or she has to eat, or, you know, so every hour you're at school, you're not with your family. You want to make sure that you're looking at it through the right lens of, why am I doing this? You know, we talked about this as a staff. Do we need to be here? Do we all have, like, there's a lot of schools where it's like, it's a pre-UIL that you're hosting, or like there's, you know, we do this with one of our middle schools come, and we have a couple of them. It's like, hey, go home. You know, if you want to stay, great, but I got it. We don't need all of you here. You know, you have another commitment, go to your other commitment.
Yeah.
Trying to find ways for us to, if we don't all have to be there, let someone else go, because we already give so much time that you want to keep people in it and doing it, focus on the right reasons and not focusing on, well, I don't want to do it because I'm not making enough money. It takes too much time. I'm never at home. It's like, those things are true, but in smaller doses, so
yeah,
that they can focus on the things that they do love.
Yeah. And one of the things, you know, there's this conversation where some people are live to work and some people are work to live. And I'm very much on the live to work side. Obviously not to the extreme, but if I'm going to be pursuing my career, my job, I definitely want it. I'm that person who cannot do the whole clock in, clock out kind of thing. And I'm sure you might resonate with that as well, is if I'm going to be doing something, I want it to be something I'm very passionate about. And two, I also kind of want it to have some kind of impact. I'm not saying I have to make a difference and change the entire world, but certainly in you know, what we are currently doing, there is some impact there. So I love that, as you mentioned, when you took that step back and try to look at your life, that one, you're still passionate about what you're doing. And two, like you said before, it's the impact on those kids. You just can't get that anywhere else. And that's completely irreplaceable, which, you know, all in all, like, just once again, emphasizes why you're very passionate and great at what you do. I have two last questions for you, and one going back to kind of like the work-life balance. One of the things that I had a conversation with a colleague was that they told me, and I could be wrong on this, is that not a lot of female music educators are parents. And I thought that was quite interesting. And you mentioning that, you know, you're a mom. Is there something that you've learned specifically being a parent I'm sure that can be kind of challenging with the work-life balance, but are there things that you've learned as being a mom that helps you kind of, in a sense, have it all in terms of having, you know, making sure that you're, you know, doing your job, and while being a music educator takes a lot of hours, but you're also dedicating, you know, time to your family as well.
It's really hard. It's really hard. And there are a lot of, I think you say music educators, there's probably a lot of choir teachers, mm-hmm. and orchestra directors who are able to do it. And I know they're like, I think of Charlotte Royal and other women, who've had children, but it's definitely not many. And I can understand why now. It's almost impossible. And I'm not a man, so I don't know what it's like to be a father, but I know my husband has told me that it's just different for women. And I think he's right. You know, I feel an obligation that I'm sure men feel, but I do think it's different. And it makes me doing this job, it makes you really have to stop and think, is this the right thing? Am I doing this for the right reasons? Am I doing this because I've always wanted to, or because I'm passionate about it? Am I doing this because this is my dream, or because I feel like I'm supposed to? And I think, again, I'm sure I say this as I'm not a father, but it is a question that makes staying in this job as a mom pretty different. Because the time commitment is so much, and you're like, I go home and I'm emotionally drained. I'm physically drained. I'm mentally drained. There are days I can't give to my husband and my daughter. And that's not a good feeling. And what I'm hoping is as I get better at the job and I'm more comfortable and my daughter gets a little bit older,
yeah.
that will get easier. And like right now it's just very, very hard. And I've talked to other women in education, you know, our dance directors, a woman, and she says it's just different. And, you know, she had twins, so if she can do it, I can do it. You know, that's amazing. But I think it is something that's, it's very challenging. I wouldn't change it for anything, but it's been very challenging.
Yeah. Well, once again, thank you so much for being on the show, and I really appreciate everything that you have said, and I really hope that people out there watching, listening, can hear this and take some of this to heart. And I have one last question for you before we wrap up. Knowing the knowledge that you have now, what is some advice or something that you wish you would known as that person who had just been picking up the trumpet for the first time, about to join band?
What I would tell myself now is do the practice sheet. Don't cheat on the practice sheet and lie on the practice sheet. Just do it.
Yeah.
But I, you know, if you want to go a little deeper than that, that it's okay to not do this full on, you know, that there's a place for you. And I hope that kids everywhere know that you don't have to be the best to be in band. There's a, I said parents these days, I am one, but you know, there's this, this belief I think in kids and in parents that their kid has to be the top. They have to be good at it. And that's just not true. You know, and I think people forget that high school is school. It's, you can call it preschool if you want, you know, it's everything that's building you into a life as an adult, you know, and it, in especially band or athletics or, you know, if you choir art, like they're for fun. And we're going to be, there's going to be aspects that are competitive because some kids really, really like that. I'm a competitive person. I want to go do stuff and win stuff. Like that's, of course, that's how people are. But I hope people remember that it's okay to not be the best and it's okay to just do it because it's fun and to, you know, you can't expect to, you know, achieve at the highest level. You're not going to work that hard, but it's okay to just do stuff for fun. And I that's something I hope that the next generation of kids is allowed to do. I know our current generation, they work so much harder than I did at everything. And it, you know, it's just band. It's just supposed to be an elective that we do really, really well. And that's what I really hope the next generation can see and do and take to heart.
Awesome. Well, where can our listeners, viewers find you? Do you have a website, social media? I'm sure the school website is just enough.
I'm on social media. I'm in that I'm on it, but I don't do a lot of sharing or posting. Yeah. But you can, sounds bad. My husband posts a lot about the things that we're doing, so you can go check him out.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Femme Forte is produced and hosted by me, Amanda DeFries. Theme song is by Humans Win. Audio production and cinematography by Jack Ventelio. For more information on Femme Forte, follow us on social media at Femme Forte Podcast and StrideTV.com. Don't forget to watch the next week's episode on the StrideTV app.